The police chief's emergency call had to bounce off three satellites to reach me. The first, over Russia, was snapping photos of their paratroops by the North Pole on maneuvers. The second, over Arctic Canada, watched a U.S. attack submarine testing weapons surfacing in ice. The last one was directly overhead above northern Alaska. North Slope Police Chief Merlin Tuvik's voice came in loud and clear from 9 miles away.
"I need help, Colonel."
I stood, breath frosting, at the end of North America on a 20-foot-high grass bluff overlooking the Arctic Ocean, a Mossberg shotgun over my back, in case polar bears showed up. Fire in the air, they usually turn away. My best friend and partner, Marine Major Eddie Nakamura, and I were trying to figure out what had killed the emaciated male bear at our feet. It looked like death by starvation. I wondered if it had been caused by a new germ.
"You know the victims, Colonel."
No other people were visible. No buildings or roads were here. The tundra stretched south for 300 miles to the Brooks Range in October in a stark, undulating beauty. An ocean of olive-brown high grass filled with dips and hummocks and spotted with the withered remains of summer flowers, once yellow paintbrush, bright firewood, purple Siberian phlox, bell heather, and my true love Karen's favorite, the white-flowered anemones, which I gathered in bunches like a lovesick teenager. But it was worth her smile.
Just about anything was.
The sea, 30 yards off, was black as anthracite and dotted with an early pancake glaze of ice. Locals had told me that the big pack would come in soon to extend all the way to the pole, 800 miles north. The sky was a thick gray. The temperature hovered at 36 degrees. The Arctic sun looked as tiny and distant as Pluto. It rotated elliptically, staying low to the horizon, lava-colored but weak, more glow than heat, as if shy, as if frightened. Soon, this remote landscape would fade to black beneath 3 months of night.
"Four people in trouble, Joe," Merlin said.
Ahead of us rose what looked like a mini Stonehenge, fantastic curving shapes rising up for 15 feet, spaced as regularly as church organ pipes and bleached gray by weather. They were bowhead whale ribs. Inupiat hunters built the bone pile, bulldozing them there twice a year after the fall and spring hunts. The bones attracted hungry polar bears, who cracked the ribs and ate the marrow. The bone pile kept polar bears off of Barrow's streets, its supermarket parking lot, its backyards, and away from America's Arctic capital's kids.
"Joe, they were your neighbors," Merlin said.
No roads led in or out of Barrow. You arrived by snowmobile or four-wheelers, like we drove today. Or you flew in or came by boat during the 4 months a year when sea ice was relatively clear. The nearest highway was 300 miles away at the oil fields of Prudhoe Bay. The voice said,
"Can you bring your medical gear?"
"Couple questions first, Merlin. How did you hear?" I hit the intercom so that Eddie could listen. He was kneeling by the carcass, looking up, a small skull saw in his gloved hands and an unrolled scalpel kit in the grass. This bear had been sick. That much was evident from the fur patches stripped away. But what had killed it? Something usual and natural? Or the type of thing we secretly sought? Merlin Tuvik said,
"The daughter called me hysterical, screaming about sickness. She was crying too hard to make out words, but then I heard a shotgun, and the call went dead.
You called back?
Yeah, tried both parents. Her, too. No one answers.
What sickness? I felt a wave of fear hit my stomach.
I don't know. I could barely hear. It was a bad connection. And there were funny noises in the background.
Please describe them. Eddie was frozen now, frowning.
Grunting. An animal, maybe. But not one that I know. Too high for a wolf, too low for a bear. Plus, she was inside their hut, she said, not outside. So whatever made the sounds was in there with her. Right beside her, sounded like. Weirdest, spookiest sounds, Joe.